Okay, it looks like we have a decent crowd coming in. Appreciate everyone's patience. And let's start. So, my name is David Feldman. I'm a family and marriage therapist here in Illinois, and I'm licensed to do business here and to work with couples. I also see couples and work with couples over the phone from anywhere in the world. And that's one of the most rewarding parts of my practice is that I get to meet really interesting people from all walks of life and all different backgrounds and all different religions and languages and continents. And we all speak the language of love and relationships. As different as we are, I can say from my experience when it comes to marriage, relationships, sex, intimacy, respect for each other, we're all extremely similar. And that's beautiful because what we all want crosses boundaries, and there really are very few differences in the way we want to be in connection with each other. So, today we are going to be speaking about is romance killing your relationship? Okay, so yeah, is romance killing your relationship? As a therapist, I can't tell you how many times I've seen romance ruin a relationship instead of strengthen a relationship. So we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about how can we use romance to create a closer connection with our partner instead of allowing it, which is what happens very often, to tear down our relationship. So the first thing we need to understand, just as I usually do, is let's just set some definitions so we're all on the same page of what we're talking about. So what is romance? So romance comes from the concept of romanticism. See, for many of us today, we kind of think of romance as something which has always been an integral part of our world. And the reality is that that's not really the case. Romanticism started in the late 18th century. So that's like 1760, 1780, and coinciding with, a little bit after the Renaissance period. But what happened during that time was that there was a shift to what's called individualism. And this individualism kind of revolves around how we self-actualize ourselves and how we are inspired and how we become happy. So if you can imagine a world before that, there wasn't really the emphasis on the me. It was really what country you belong to, what tribe you belong to, what heritage you came from, what family you belong to. These things were the most dominant aspects of your identity as a person. During the Romantic period, what happened was that we started focusing on the I and the me. And this, what happened in terms of relationships was that all of a sudden people started looking at relationships of instead of, how is this going to affect my community? How is this going to affect my family? How is this going to affect my country? If you were like a very prestigious person, we started thinking of how is this going to affect me and myself? Right? What do I need to be happy in a relationship? And that's really the concept of romanticism, which then led to romance, which is what are the things that I personally am looking for in a relationship in order to make me happy, right? And obviously, this was portrayed. Most of us are very familiar with, Romeo and Juliet. Obviously, these were two, star-crossed lovers who came from different families at the time with different politics, and but they were in love, right? So they basically, gave the bird to the system instead of focusing on what was right for their families, they decided to stand up for what was right for themselves, right? And so therefore, they focused on how much attraction do they have? How much love do they have? How similar is, how perfect is this person for me? Okay. All of which sounds good, right? I'm not here to take any of that away. All that stuff sounds terrific. The problem comes in when we eschew or forgo all reason and logic and as well as kind of expectations in as kind of the casual in lieu of romanticism, right? So that seems to be where the issue is, and we'll talk about that in just a second. When we put ourselves and our desires and our inspiration and our lusts and our feelings and our emotions as the front seat, the driver, what happens is that we tend to minimize and forego some of the other truths about relationships, which were basically well understood, if not vocalized, but at least well understood, that keep a relationship healthy and functioning, right? So what ends up happening is that we give all this weight to our romantic desires and our romantic feelings, and we take away the importance of so many of the foundational aspects of what makes a relationship everlasting, everlasting, loving, connecting, and having an authentic relationship with another person. And even to the extent that oftentimes we remove even what the whole purpose of a relationship is. So this is how romanticism and romance can actually kill your relationship, unfortunately. And I do see it a lot, unfortunately. I do see it in my practice where I see couples come to me who, on paper, they're wonderful together. And not just on paper, in real life, they're actually extremely compatible. They want the same things. They espouse the same values. And one of the partners has some sort of bug inside their brain where they allow their personal dissatisfaction in some aspect of the relationship to tear down the entire family. And that's really sad when that happens, right? So let's talk about what some of the common ways, how are some of the most, what are the common myths of romantic love, and how we can combat those myths and at the same time utilize romance to enhance our relationship, because everybody wants a loving, passionate, connecting, emotionally fulfilling relationship. Everybody wants that. And you can have that. And you really can have that. But we have to put the horse before the cart. We have to understand what are some of the building blocks of a relationship. It's kind of like, I like to give one more analogy. You know, everybody wants a beautiful home and a beautiful family and a beautiful home life, right? But if we don't build the externality of the home, the physical home, right? We have to have bricks and wood and insulation and electricity that has conduit and proper plumbing and everything else. If we don't solidify that, then there's no capacity to have a healthy, fun, interesting, passionate home life. Instead, what ends up happening is that if you put all those things as your primary goal and you don't build the externalities, then what's going to happen is that you built nothing and the whole edifice is going to come crumbling down. Okay, so here are three myths that we can talk about that I feel allow the disuse the concept of romance and turn it into something which is beautiful and connecting, turning it from something which is beautiful and connecting into something which is destructive. Okay. The first myth that we have is that the purpose of a relationship is to be happy. Okay. This is a very common misconception. I'm getting married to be happy. I want to fall in love so that I can be happy, right? If you're walking into a relationship with this as your primary objective, you are going to be very disappointed. Okay. Very disappointed. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have tons and tons of happiness inside your relationship. Don't quote me as saying that. But if you think the purpose of your relationship is to find personal fulfillment and happiness, right? You are, in my opinion, bastardizing the concept of romance. You are misusing the concept of romance to your detriment and to the detriment of your relationship. Okay? Marriage, the purpose of marriage is to create an everlasting relationship with another person, with your spouse, where you build family and legacy and support each other for the rest of your life. It's a vehicle through which you find personal fulfillment as well as growth, as well as create a legacy, as well as serve God. Okay, that's why we get married. We do not get married to be happy. Now, that doesn't mean, like I said, ideally marriages should create happiness. But when we put happiness first, then what ends up happening is that if any of those above mentioned concepts, i.e. building a family or establishing something everlasting, meaning you're not committed, or serving God, meaning you're only doing this for self-interest, or serving your partner, or you don't recognize that there's personal growth in your relationship, that is part of the point. There's an entire theory of therapy called imago therapy, which the entire perspective of imago therapy is that you meet your soulmate specifically to fix the issues that you come to the table with, most likely from a previous childhood wound or even in a previous life. I believe that they say that. That last section may just be something that I've thought into that, but there's emotional and spiritual wounds that's the whole reason why you meet your soulmate, right? And so much of marriage therapy has to do with how each person in the relationship is touching, triggering, and healing the other partner's weaknesses, right? So we have to go into marriage knowing that this is going to be a challenge, right? A great challenge, the most important challenge you ever can undertake. Right, and that through that we hopefully will find a lot of happiness, but we do not get married to be happy. Okay, that's number one. The second myth that I feel causes destruction, or it's a misuse of the concept of romance, is the modern definition of soulmate. Okay. I always understood soulmate to be, because I learned through the concept of soulmate through the Jewish tradition, I never came across this, but recently I've been coming across the definitions of soulmate as quote unquote the perfect partner. Okay? This is a huge this is, if you're walking into any relationship and you think you're going to be finding, or you're holding out for, or you're looking for the perfect partner, whoa, are you in for a shock, right? So the second idea is that perfect partner, right? There is no such thing as the perfect partner. The second Eve tasted from the apple, right? And then gave some to Adam, it's all over, okay? Because we are souls which are perfect, but our souls are in bodies which are by their very definition imperfect. Right, and a marriage is the connection between our souls that's drawing with it, schlepping, so to speak, together our two imperfect bodies. Okay, there is no such thing as a perfect partner, and people, especially women, unfortunately, I feel like this in my practice and from what I've been reading and from what I see, this affects women more than men, which is quote unquote, I could do better. Right? Or I let the good one get away. Right? These are messages that we give ourselves or that our friends tell us, which are so far removed from reality, it's oftentimes tragic. Okay? Your partner is going to be very imperfect. And no matter how perfect you think they are when you first meet them, and even when you first date them, for some reason, women have this, God has granted women this special gift that, you know, men talk about quote unquote beer glasses, right? I like to say that women have dating glasses, right? So what are beer glasses? Beer glasses is when a guy's intoxicated, he looks at a woman and he finds himself very attracted to her. But when he wakes up the next morning and he doesn't have the beer glasses anymore, he sees the reality that this person wasn't as attractive as he originally thought. So women have dating glasses, like pre-marriage glasses that they wear, where they, for some reason they think this guy is like the greatest guy and he's wonderful and he's kind and he's loving and he's sexy and he's considerate and he's thoughtful and he's alpha male, right? Alpha male, right? And then the second she gets married, literally, the glasses are off her face, and starting the next day, she starts seeing this person for who he really is. And it doesn't make a difference who this guy was before. He could be the hottest basketball player, the coolest, richest businessman, the most alpha male on Twitter. It doesn't make any difference. The second she gets married to this person, pop off the glasses, and now she sees him for who he really is. And she doesn't even see him for who he really is. She sees him for worse than he really is. She sees every flaw and even flaws that he doesn't really have, and she still sees those flaws that he doesn't even have. She makes up flaws about this person. So this idea that a soulmate is your perfect partner, no. A soulmate is the person whom God has gifted you to take this journey of life with together. And there's a special gift just for you to help you turn into a better human being. And in general, especially in the Jewish tradition, they're really a gift from God. Really, the woman is the gift for men. It's an important point for men to understand that women go through enormous sacrifice in order to help the men in their lives become adults. So this is something that we have to turn towards our wives and thank them for. Even though it can feel very uncomfortable and it can be shocking to our system, nonetheless, it's a special kindness that a woman does for the man in her life, and a burden that she carries to help him become a better man. Okay, that's the second aspect of romanticism, which I feel is misused in relationships. The third myth of romance is that my partner should desire me. Just like in the movies, just like in the plays and the literature, the desire is the holy grail of a great relationship. That my wife desires me, and that I desire, and that my husband desires me. This is a huge myth in a healthy relationship. Okay, now that doesn't mean there shouldn't be desire in your relationship, but if we are sitting back and waiting for our partners to desire us, right, we are in for a huge shock. All right, and we are in for massive disappointment. And again, the problem with all these myths is that they create disappointment in the partner, right? And this disappointment leads to people checking out, or anger or frustration or resentment, and they check out of the relationship. That creates distance. Distance creates coldness. Coldness creates separation, and separation leads to divorce. But that's what's going on here. That's why these things are so toxic. So the third one is that desire is something that my partner should feel for me, and something my partner should feel for me. I should be desired, right? Now this one's a hard one, especially for women. I'm really going to focus this particular one on men, because I hear this from men all the time. How do I get her to fall in love with me? How do I get her to desire me? How do I become the man who she yearns for and longs for? How do I get her to look at me like she used to look at me before we got married? Right? This is a big thing by men. And I'm sure women feel the same way. But I feel like I'm not a woman, so I'm going to speak a little bit less. And I know that there is a difference in the way women look at this and men look at this. So I'm going to primarily be speaking from a male perspective, but I think this is an important topic, right? So where's the myth there? What's wrong with wanting to be desired, right? What's wrong with it? Well, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be desired, right? There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not very conducive to, in my opinion, it's not very conducive to creating real love and connection in your relationship, real happiness in your relationship, real joy in your relationship. Why is that? Because when I put my focus on being desired, I have literally given all the power of romance and passion to my partner. Meaning, if I don't feel desired, then I don't feel alive. I don't feel like I have value. I don't feel like this relationship is something that's really true, authentic, right? That's the messages that I give myself, right? I personally like to say the opposite. I don't really care how much my partner desires me. The only thing I really care about is how much I desire my partner. Meaning, if I want to be happy, I have to be the one who desires her. I have to be the one who's madly in love with her. I have to be the one that looks at her in the morning and says, oh my gosh, this is the most beautiful woman in the world. I can't wait to get my hands all over you. To me, that's an indicator of being happy and fulfilled in my relationship. Right? If I focus on how much she desires me because her mind is somewhere else, or her body is somewhere else, or her heart is somewhere not into it for right now, for whatever reason, maybe she's going through all different types of things in life, right? She could have a heavy heart because of something she heard about her family, or she could have a heavy heart because maybe there's something I did to her that she's still upset about. Maybe she could have a heavy heart because she's going through her own emotional crisis or personal crisis, right? All these different things. So if I hand over how much she desires me, how I feel about myself and how I feel about the relationship and whether I think the relationship is valuable based on whether or not she desires me, I'm in for a world of hurt. Instead, flip the script. Focus on how much you desire her. If you're waking up and not looking at her like she's the rose of your life, what's wrong with you? Like, what's up? If you're waking up in the morning, or if you're in the middle of the day, or if you're going to bed at night and you're lacking a passion for her, get your act together. Right? So this is the turnaround that we do with desire. Right? We don't wait for our partners to desire us. We focus on our desire for us. And I can say for women that I found personally that this has been effective for them as well. Which is, you know, if there's a woman who's just not feeling it for her husband, sometimes they come to me and they talk to me and they say, well, I'm just not feeling desire for my husband. So instead of me working with the husband to generate desire for her, I look at her and I say, well, what are you going to do about it? How are you handling this? What changes are you going to make so that you begin to start seeing your husband as somebody who is going to turn you on? And that's very powerful work, because it's usually based in a lack of gratitude and a lack of respect, right? And those are usually faulty feelings based in some sort of resentment or negative perspective that they're holding on to that has very little to do with the husband. So there is a benefit in that, but I do understand for women that being desired is very important to them. So I'm not trying to make light of that for women, but for men, I really don't think it should be. As a matter of fact, I think it's a mistake. I think men should not be focused almost at all on being desired, but rather focus completely on how to generate desire for their partner. And this leads to the final thing I just want to share, which is that, so how do we use romance? If romance has so many pitfalls to it, and romance is so egocentric, and romance is so much about the I, when marriage and relationship is so much about the we, and about the greater purpose, so how do we use romance to our advantage? Right? Because everybody wants romance. That's a beautiful thing. So this is what my perspective is. Romance is fantastic. I love romance. I love watching romantic comedies. They don't make them anymore like they used to, but all the olden days, they had so many great ones out there. I thought they were funny and they're moving, and you know, maybe I'm just a sap and that's pretty much it. But the way we use romance is when we look at it from this perspective, which is that I want romance to be in my relationship, so therefore I am going to be romantic. I want my relationship to have romance in it, so therefore I am going to do romantic things for my partner. I will use romance to my advantage in my relationship. I will never say, oh, she's not romantic enough, or I'm not experiencing enough romance, or no one's being romantic to me. I'm not happy. I'm not, my partner isn't, you know, I could have done better, or she doesn't desire me. These are all ways where you're using, I want to turn that around. I'm going to create happiness in the relationship. I'm going to see and get to know and express gratitude for all the ways my partner is perfect. And I'm going to focus on how I can increase my desire for her. If you do those three things, you are going to have the most romantic, healthily romantic relationship you can imagine. And she's going to feel it, right? And when she feels it, she's going to turn around and you're going to see the incredible openness that she's going to have towards you and the increase in love and goodwill, kindness, patience, forgiveness, respect. All the good things come with that, right? Awesome. Okay. Well, I've been talking long enough as usual. Thank you everyone so much for listening. I am going to open the floor to anybody here who wants to share some ideas. I know Heath is here. I'd love to hear his perspective. Dev, you're one of my favorites. I'd always love to hear anything that you have to say. I don't know who Cher Ali is. You've been asking to speak. I'm going to put you on. Yeah, but I'd love for other people to share. Perhaps they have a story. Perhaps romance was something which benefited their relationship. Perhaps romance is something which really caused them a sad story and destroyed their relationship. I mean, they had these expectations of what the relationship should be like based on romance movies and romance novels, and instead of being proactive about romance, got disappointed that their relationship didn't look like what they thought relationship should be. And maybe somebody has that story if they're brave enough to share that. Maybe somebody has a question. Maybe somebody has some other concept in romance that they think is beneficial or could be harmful in a relationship. SJ, I always like when you share something. Samara, I know that you're here. You always have something interesting to say. Let's see, SJ, if you'll speak today. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's so much that we learn from media, entertainment. There's so much that we learn from media and entertainment that cause us to kind of go off the rails a little bit or set us up for disappointment. As I think I've heard Heath say this once before, and I know I've said it, you know, all these movies that we watch, as funny as they are and as humorous and maybe touching as they are, they always end when the couple finally decides to get married, right? So we get this image that that's what relationships are like, and that's really not what they're like at all. They can be like that, like I said. But you have to turn romance on its head. You've got to turn it around to work in your favor, right? And that's by proactively romantic. And when you're proactively romantic and you have a concept and understanding of what relationships, the purpose of why you got married, the purpose of your soulmate, the purpose of your perfect partner, you know, and the purpose of why you have this thing called desire, and you start using it in your favor, in the favor of the relationship, you could have a very romantic relationship. It's just not going to look really that much like what you see on TV. It could look better in so many ways, too. Heath, do you want to share some things?
Yes, thank you, David. Again, excellent, excellent preamble there. I'm setting the stage for this discussion. I love the first point There's a great book by a guy named Gary Thomas. He says the reason you get married is not to make you happy, but to make you holy. And so I'm a Christian, and so I believe God brings marriage and so that I can be sharpened, so that I can become more selfless compared to being selfish. And yes, the byproduct, though, of having a great relationship is you will be happy at times. And my wife makes me extremely happy, but that's not the purpose. If you go into marriage hoping that person's going to satisfy you, make you whole, et cetera, you're going to be let down. I'm responsible for my own happiness. I'm responsible for my own contentment. Now, my wife, she can add to that, right? She can bring some more external joy. She can encourage me in life. She can bring me smiles and good conversation, those things. But I'm responsible for my own happiness. Just another point, too, about romance. I also agree with the thing that when it comes to the romance novels, the Hallmark movies, the Hollywood celebrity-style romance, that thing is like a chasing after the wind. There can be times in your life that you have some very romantic times. You know, I took my wife to Paris and Rome a couple years ago before COVID, and it was a wonderful time. But that's not every day, right? But same time, I try to make it romantic. I try to make it so it's easier for her to respond to me when we're having romantic interludes. But I'm responsible to bring that romance to my wife. And Dovid, I just like how you talked about that. If you're not feeling the desire for your spouse, then what do you need to do? Right? Like, you know, I tell guys when it comes, if you want your wife to be more fit or whatever, number one step to that is work on your own dad bod, work on your own bad breath, work on that. And then steps 2 through 10 don't matter. You need to keep working on yourself, because my wife and I, that's what we try to do. And the more that we work on ourselves, we inspire each other. Right? If you get around a motivational poster, motivational movie, motivational YouTube clip, whatever, it makes you want to be better. And so we are just working on ourselves. We are not each other's life coach. My wife does not want me to be her life coach, and I don't want her to be my life coach. But we inspire each other through us working on ourselves, and that's very romantic. Those are just a couple of thoughts I have.